cuts force a Minnesota health insurance company to drop coverage for about 90,000 Minnesotans. Then, students and families react to tuition increases at the University of Minnesota. And an update on the Minnesota senator shot and critically injured in what authorities called a targeted political attack. I'm Chantel Sings. UCARE, which markets itself as a leader for Medicaid coverage in Minnesota, is going to stop offering Medicaid and Minnesota Care coverage in 11 counties, at least temporarily. Medicaid is a government-funded health insurance plan for low-income individuals and families. The health insurance company says it's working with the state and counties to help the roughly 88,000 Minnesotans who will be impacted by the change. UCARE will continue to offer Medicaid and Minnesota Care plans in 44 Minnesota counties. Plans for seniors and people with disabilities are not impacted by the cuts. Next, the University of Minnesota has approved a multi-billion dollar budget that includes a sharp tuition increase. Catherine DeSalle tells us what it means for students and their families.
The hardest thing a board has to do, any elected board, is pass a budget. Nobody is going to be 100% happy with this budget. And that's part of being an elected official, and that's what we have to do.
That's Doug Hubsch, a member of the University of Minnesota Board of Regents, talking at last month's meeting where the university approved a $5.1 billion operating budget, which includes its largest tuition hike in more than a decade. The announcement came just months before students are to begin classes in the fall. Liam Donahoe, an upcoming freshman, was excited that he got into the University of Minnesota, his first choice school.
Both my parents went there, and I know a lot of buddies who are going there too, but it's close to home, it's convenient.
For university students this fall, in-state undergraduate and graduate tuition at the Twin Cities and Rochester campuses will rise by 6.5%. For Liam, this means he will pay over $2,000 more in tuition, which leaves him and students like him scrambling to find ways to pay tuition.
I was going to be working either way, but now I really got to go probably full time. I'm going to be being able to afford college.
According to the University of Minnesota Admissions Department, 75% of students have jobs.
I was thinking of working up at UPS because they do, for college students, they pay off about $5,000 every semester when you work a set amount of hours.
To offset costs, Liam says he also looked into working at the university, but it is not ideal for his school schedule. Liam's mom, Sarah Elms.
Liam doesn't qualify for any financial aid. All he got qualified for was just loans at a lower interest rate. Federal loans, $5,500 a semester, but it's still money he has to pay back. So it's basically all on him.
Sarah went to the University of Minnesota in the early 2000s and didn't worry about how she was going to pay for her tuition.
It was like $6,000 a semester. I was granted more than that per semester because I was a student parent. So paying for college was like a manageable loan that never was overwhelming.
Sarah says she paid a fraction of the price of tuition that Liam will be paying.
I think about Liam, and 1 year for him was like my whole college career. $36,000 for the year, so it's about $18,000 per semester.
University of Minnesota President Rebecca Cunningham speaking at the Board of Regents meeting in June.
We can all agree there are no easy choices this year. Higher education is truly facing unprecedented challenges. The University of Minnesota is not immune, and therefore we have to make difficult decisions.
The university president went on to defend the tuition increase, pointing to a $40 million loss in federal funding, combined with no increase in state support. For North Star Stories, I'm Catherine DeSalle.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Minnesota Senator John Hoffman is out of the hospital and recovering at a long-term rehabilitation facility. A spokesperson for the Hoffman family said the senator and his wife, Yvette, both have a long road to recovery ahead of them. A gunman disguised as a police officer shot Senator Hoffman and his wife multiple times before their daughter, Hope, could call 911. Police say after shooting the Hoffmans, the gunman went on to shoot and kill Minnesota House Senator Amaretta Melissa Hortman and her husband. Vance Bolter, the suspected gunman, faces multiple state and federal charges, including murder.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Today, federal cuts may shake greater Minnesota manufacturers. Then, why you should check for ticks after every walk this summer. And a new meatpacking plant brings on-the-job training to central Minnesota. I'm Gracie J. Minnesota's small to mid-sized manufacturers want federal funding to continue for a program that helps them grow their businesses. The future of the Manufacturing Extension Partnership, or MEP, is uncertain after the Trump administration tried to effectively end the program in 10 states earlier this year. Minnesota was not on the list, but it is due for a renewal of MEP funds at the end of this year. Cuts to this funding could hit greater Minnesota especially hard, as smaller companies in these regions tend to rely on MEP funding for business support. In today's main story, ticks are waiting in the grass for their next meal to walk past. And every summer, more Minnesotans are suffering from their effects. Here's Britt Ahmet with the story.
Holly Zielinski's mystery illness hit suddenly.
I started having pain when I bent my fingers.
This was 2015. The busy business owner, wife, and mom wasn't old enough for arthritis to seem likely. Then it progressed.
I woke up one morning and thought, I don't feel good. And by that evening, I was crying in bed saying there's something really wrong with me.
All her joints hurt. She was having heart palpitations and sleeping 18 hours a day. She saw doctors, but it took 13 months for a correct diagnosis. She had Lyme disease, given to her by the bite of a deer tick.
I didn't know I was bitten by the tick. I didn't ever pull a tick off of me, and I didn't have the ring that everybody talks about.
The bullseye rash only appears in about 70% of cases, and even then, you might not see it if the bite's on your scalp or back. Minnesota is home to 12 tick species.
Some of them are of more concern when it comes to disease transmission than others.
Elizabeth Schiffman is supervisor of the Vector-Borne Diseases Unit at the Minnesota Department of Health. Schiffman says the most common disease carriers are the wood tick and the deer tick. Her department has been tracking a rise in cases.
The trend overall is kind of an increase over time. So we just keep finding more and more of these diseases. And we keep seeing them in expanding areas of the state. We have anaplasmosis, babesiosis, and then there's also Powassan virus.
But the most common is Lyme. Minnesota is among the top 10 states for the disease transmitted by the deer tick. In 2022, the most recent year data was collected, there were nearly 2,700 cases.
The most important thing to do is to get the tick off.
John Oliver is an associate professor in the Division of Environmental Health Sciences at the University of Minnesota.
The longer the tick remains attached, the more likely it is to transmit any pathogens that are in its body into your body.
Oliver says grab it with tweezers or fingers as close to the skin as possible and pull straight out. Vaseline, matches, and alcohol are no longer recommended for removal.
Make sure that you don't develop any symptoms within a few weeks of that tick bite. And so if you develop flu-like symptoms, definitely go tell your doctor.
The good news is that most ticks don't carry disease. But the best defense is prevention, says Holly Zielinski, whose Lyme disease was cured with antibiotics. A big pointer, always do a tick check.
It's just so important that Minnesotans check for ticks every single time they come in.
For North Star Stories, this is Britt Ahmet.
You are listening to North Star Stories. A unique partnership is bringing jobs and job training to central Minnesota. Minnesota Farmers Union recently broke ground on an 8,000-square-foot meat processing plant in Staples. It's part of the union's three-tiered plan to help local farmers regain control of livestock markets, solve processing bottlenecks, and build rural economies. Along with creating new jobs, Farmers Union Processing and Meats will also partner with Central Lakes and Ridgewater Colleges to train students in meat processing and butchery. The facility is set to open in January of next year.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's stories, Minnesota has its first licensed cannabis business. Then, Minnesota may be facing a physician's crisis. And students with special needs in the Northland are getting updated classrooms. I'm Chantel Sings. The Office of Cannabis Management, or OCM, issued HerbQuest, a microbusiness located in East Central Minnesota, a license to carry out outdoor cultivation earlier this month. More than 600 other businesses could soon join its ranks. It's a major step toward establishing a legal recreational cannabis market here in the state. The OCM will also open license applications for testing facilities and cannabis-related events later this summer. The OCM encourages individuals interested in applying to visit its website for more information. Next, the number of physicians leaving practice is outpacing the number of new physicians joining the workforce in the state. These numbers are expected to reach a critical point in the next 5 to 10 years if preventative measures are not implemented. Jose Azoria has more.
The bodies are not there. That leaves us in a very tough position because we can't recruit fast enough to replace those that are leaving.
Dr. Edwin Bonkoko is the president of the Minnesota Medical Association. He describes how the math has him and many in his field concerned about the future of their profession within the state.
We need almost 1,200 additional primary care physicians by 2030. And if you balance that with what our current workforce is, that's almost a 28% to 30% increase. The rate at which we are adding physicians to our primary care environment is single digits. We are falling behind significantly.
Dr. Bongoko says that the crisis we're currently experiencing was predicted years ago.
Association of American Medical Colleges, they predicted 5 years ago that by 2033 we would have a shortage of between 54,000 to almost 140,000 physicians by 2033.
Mackenzie Richards is a healthcare policy fellow with the Cicero Institute. She says that this physician shortage is already creating a strain on the system and creating a burden on current physicians.
29.9% of all Minnesotan physicians are currently at or above the typical retirement age. This could be exacerbated at any moment because you already have a lot of physicians that could be retiring, but they're choosing not to because of the need.
Dr. Bongoko points out that along with an aging physician pool, there are very specific reasons for the physician shortage.
The business of running a practice is becoming more and more marginal because of federal health policies. The other dynamic is that physicians are starting practice with mountains and mountains of school debt. Instead of going back to their communities, they're choosing to stay in school to get the much higher paying specialties that can double their income so that they can pay their school debt.
But this crisis is not a problem without some potential solutions. Ms. Richards gives us one possible solution to this growing medical crisis.
Minnesota recently passed through the omnibus bill that was in the special session, HF2. In that bill, there was some language for international medical graduates to be able to practice in Minnesota under a limited license. This can help attract talented physicians from abroad to be able to work in Minnesota.
Dr. Bongoko feels that there are a combination of things that could be done to potentially eliminate the developing crisis.
Collaborate with all these different groups that are really intent on introducing young people with science and technology backgrounds to consider healthcare as a career. We don't have the investment in training more doctors. So if we can do that and also add the idea of loan forgiveness, we could mitigate some of those shortages.
For North Star Stories, I'm Jose Osoria.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Special education students in northeastern Minnesota will soon have a new facility. Workers recently broke ground on Northland Learning Center's new school in Mountain Iron, which is about 70 miles northwest of Duluth. It is set to open next year. The $17 million facility includes elementary, high school, and alternative learning classrooms. Northland Learning Center provides special education and support services to more than 1,500 youth and adults across northeastern Minnesota.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's broadcast, a Lower Sioux team baseball player gets national recognition. Then, after federal cuts, an important hotline for vulnerable communities goes silent. And Northland Arboretum brings space for conservation and recreation. I'm Gracie J. A Minnesota high schooler is among the top 50 native baseball players in the country. Maxim Dillon is a member of the Lower Sioux Indian community and is a rising senior at Redwood Valley Senior High in southwestern Minnesota. As one of the athletes chosen for the fourth annual All-Star Showcase hosted by the Atlanta Braves, Dillon took part in a pro-level workout and played in front of college and professional scouts. The full roster included athletes from 31 tribes across 22 states. Well, ahead, a specialized suicide and crisis hotline for LGBTQ plus youth will end this summer. McFinnigan talks to experts about what this means for Minnesotans.
You've reached the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. To connect to support for LGBTQI plus youth and young adults, press 3.
For lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer youth who call the 988 Suicide Prevention Line, option 3 has been a life-saving service. The White House is eliminating option 3.
So I'm a crisis counselor for the 988 program, option 3.
Brooks Wilson works for the Trevor Project, a nonprofit focused on suicide prevention among LGBTQIA plus youth. The organization fielded half of the calls to option 3 last year.
The work that they do with 988 has been a big part of that, but they also run their own like hotline as well, and that's still going to be around.
While 988 and the Trevor Project services will continue, eliminating the funding for Option 3 has several big impacts. For queer youth in crisis, it means no longer having access to crisis counselors specifically trained to work within the queer community. And for folks like Brooks, it means looking for new work.
My job is going away. All of my coworkers are going to be directly affected by this.
Kat Roan is the executive director for Outfront, Minnesota's largest LGBTQ advocacy group.
The closure of federal support for 988 services really means that a population that is already experiencing a lot of harms is going to experience more with fewer accessible supports.
Part of Outfront Services is running an LGBTQ domestic and sexual violence and crisis counseling hotline.
A couple years ago, what we saw was a broadening of a safety net that was really necessary for folks. And now we're seeing sort of the reverse as those investments and those partnerships contract.
The shift away from option 3 is expected to increase call volumes to other crisis lines like the one Outfront provides.
The disinvestment in LGBTQ-specific youth services is going to mean that those youth are reaching out to other services that are either maybe not as competent in the specific needs of this community or just aren't able to handle the increases in volume.
Brooks and Kat emphasize that since the 2024 election, there has been more stress on queer resources like theirs, and a change like this will continue that trend.
That's obviously a challenge in the current environment where we're already above our baseline capacity.
Kat says the current administration is continuing what many consider an attack on LGBTQ rights.
What's unique and new about this particular moment is that the level of rhetoric that we're seeing from leaders is this shift to actively targeting and harming youth. I think is really harmful in a way that we haven't yet grappled with.
Anyone considering suicide or having a mental health crisis is still encouraged to call or text 988. Minnesota has shown its commitment to continuing this resource with Minnesota-specific crisis counselors and state funding. This is McFinnigan for North Star Stories.
You are listening to North Star Stories. The Northland Arboretum, which has locations in Brainerd and Baxter in northern Minnesota, is taking steps to expand recreational opportunities while protecting its natural spaces. The Crow Wing County Board recently approved the Arboretum's new master plan, which includes an ice skating trail, a disc golf course, and expanded prairie restoration. The 413-acre property aims to balance conservation with public use. Arboretum leaders are now applying for regional park designation, supported by community input from surveys and public meetings. Most of the land will remain preserved with new strategies in place to protect its natural features.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Today, an endangered species is spreading its wings again in northern Minnesota. Then, take the repellent out. Mosquito season is upon us. And big news for Minnesota Frost fans. I'm Chantel Sinks. Seven eggs of the once endangered peregrine falcons have hatched and ready to leave their nest in Duluth. Volunteers from the nonprofit The Raptor Resource Project recently fitted each of the baby chicks with two leg bands. These bands will track the birds' migration patterns, social behavior, and long-term trends after they leave the nest. The falcons have nest sites at two Minnesota Power Energy facilities, another company essential to the species' recovery. All of this will help ensure the safety and stability of the peregrine falcons, which nearly went extinct in the 1970s. Up next, Minnesota has experienced a tame spring mosquito season, but this summer we can expect to see an increase in the population. Mick Finnegan brings us what we need to expect and how to prepare.
Nights in Minnesota have started to feel more like what we're used to. Warm, humid, and buggy. Unlike previous years, we did not experience a surge in mosquito populations this spring, but warmer temperatures and peak mosquito season are upon us.
So we're anticipating that we're going to start seeing them, and some areas are already starting to see fair numbers, especially further away you get from the heart of Minneapolis and St. Paul.
Metropolitan Mosquito Control District has traps all over the seven counties they serve to study disease-carrying insects and report on the mosquito numbers in the area. They reported less than a third of average numbers of mosquitoes until late June. Public Affairs Manager Alex Carlson tells us more about what they are seeing this year.
We've had a very slow start, which has been unusual the past couple of years. We've seen big spring surges in the past couple of years. A lot of times that's because the rivers are overflowing and things like that. But low water levels really helped kind of get things slow. Plus, it's been cooler.
Alex says that reports from around the state show the same population trajectory as the Twin Cities.
Statewide, we kind of follow the similar patterns because our water is the same wherever you go.
Although we've experienced low mosquito numbers this spring, Minnesotans will continue to see the population increase in July during peak mosquito season.
If you look at the 10-year average, it's about that first week in July is when we see the peak activity. We don't expect that to be different this year because the cattail mosquitoes are out because of last year's rain.
Cattail mosquitoes lay their eggs in the water and the larvae overwinter under the ice. They start hatching in the spring, but we see the highest population hatching in early July.
Because last year was very rainy, we're anticipating we're going to see a big hatch of those this year.
Alex says that although we do not know how bad they will get, the cattail mosquito population is already surpassing metrics from 2024.
Yeah, about an inch of rain is what's required for what we call a brood, so a new generation of mosquitoes to hatch.
After a mostly dry spring, we can expect to see more mosquitoes with the increase in rainfall. Experts recommend protecting yourself by wearing bug spray and covering up even when the mosquito populations are lower.
Typically, things start to slow down in the end of the summer, but the end of the summer is when those disease-carrying mosquitoes tend to flourish.
While Metropolitan Mosquito Control District provides many preventative services to control dangerous mosquitoes, they cannot be in everyone's backyard. An easy, impactful way to protect yourself and your neighbors is to alleviate any standing water on your property.
So anytime people leave something out that gets stagnant and murky, then mosquitoes will fly in and lay their eggs and it becomes more mosquito habitat, especially some of the more dangerous mosquitoes.
Check your yard after each rain, empty tires, kiddie pools, and planters.
If you live in the Twin Cities and you're noticing a lot of mosquitoes, give us a call because we like that information. We do a lot of surveillance and trapping and stuff, but we're not everywhere. So we always take customer calls seriously and we encourage people to call us and let us know if they're seeing a lot more than usual because then we might be able to go out and do something to help.
For North Star Stories, I'm Mick Finnegan.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Goaltender Maddie Rooney has signed a 3-year contract to remain with the Minnesota Frost through the 2027-28 Professional Women's Hockey League season. Rooney has led the league in shutouts and ranks among the nation's top goaltenders. The Andover native is a former University of Minnesota Duluth Bulldog and 2018 Olympic gold medalist. She joins 9 other players already signed for the 2025-26 season, including her goaltending partner.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
I'm Marie Rock. This week on Minnesota Native News, updates on a project supported by Understand Native Minnesota, aimed at changing what people know about Indigenous Minnesotans. Producer Lori Stern covered the launch of the campaign. Now she reports on its accomplishments.
I have a sixth grade curriculum for social studies in collaboration with Dakota Wichoha, which is a Native nonprofit in Morton, Minnesota.
That's Ie Kiapiwe, Darlene St. Clair, Indigenous research professor in the College of Education and Human Development at the University of Minnesota. She helped write a 10-lesson course that examines Minnesota Mekoche as a Dakota place.
Why sixth grade? It is because this is when you learn about state history, but I often in my trainings, I pretty much always say this because I love saying it. I'm like, I love you 40-year-olds, you're great, but I'm investing in sixth graders.
She refined and distributed the curriculum thanks to a grant from Understand Native Minnesota, funded by the Shakopee Bedewa-Kanton Sioux community.
Sixth graders to start thinking of a way that they have a connection to this land and that they're part of the story of Minnesota. They're part of the story of how Minnesota Mekoche becomes Minnesota, but that Minnesota Mekoche is still here and is still present in our experience.
She's also leading a second grant to expand the Native Studies Summer Workshop for Educators, or NISWE, a week-long immersion for teachers hosted by a tribal community. The grant expands the conference to offer two sessions in two host communities per summer.
So the community that hosts us, I work with collaboratively during the year, and I ask questions like, what is the story of your community that you want educators to know? And they help me direct their own story. Most of our presenters at the workshop are people from the community.
Magajiwana, also called the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, is hosting the second round of the Native Studies Summer Workshop for Educators this summer at the Black Bear Casino Resort from July 21st through 25th.
It's a rare opportunity, I think, for most Minnesotans to learn about Native people in Native community.
Interested attendees can still sign up online on the University of Minnesota Twin Cities website.
For Minnesota Native News, I'm Lori Stern.
Up next, a reminder on the importance of invasive species prevention in Minnesota's tribal nations. At Leech Lake and Mille Lacs, invasive species like starry stonewort and zebra mussels are spreading. In Lake Superior, sea lampreys and rough fish outcompete native fish. For Red Lake Nation, the stakes are especially high.
My name is Pat Prowler, and I am the fisheries director for the Red Lake Band, and I've been up here for about 28 years. We know what works now. The only thing that can screw that up on us would be basically our invasive species. We monitor for those, but we're going to continue to try to protect this lake and keep it healthy.
Red Lake's walleye population collapsed in the 1990s. However, the tribe and state collaborators brought it back.
We started fishing again in 2006. And we've been fishing now for the last 20 seasons, and we've been able to harvest almost 20 million pounds of walleye out of this lake now.
That recovery could be undone if invasive species take hold.
We've worked with the middle school and the high schools here on the reservation because a lot of these kids weren't around when the walleye collapsed.
Prevention is also about passing on stories and stewardship.
And we still tell the story. It can happen. And that we need to protect this so that next seven generations have the walleye to utilize as we do today.
To learn more about stopping aquatic invasive species everywhere in Minnesota, visit dnr.state.mn.us/invasives. For Minnesota Native News, I'm Marie Rock. Minnesota Native News is produced by AMPERS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
Let's talk about Minnesota. There's a tremendous spirit of collaboration between different agencies and the public and business and universities.
This is Beyond Active Duty, caring for those who served.
a series exploring the challenges Minnesota's veterans face, as well as the opportunities and services available to them.
I'm Eric Allness, and I'm a veteran. We have vet centers at universities that are a direct result of what the Minnesota National Guard and the Department of Veterans Affairs have done in the 2000s, early 2000s. You know, that was part of Larry Shelto's initiative. I was talking to people in the military. I'd say, you know, business really wants to hire you. And I said, so when you're reaching the end of your military career, or even if it's you're just doing one or two terms and then you're leaving, it's incumbent upon you to study the culture and the language of business.